Hi there. Welcome to the Dialogue on Digital Rights for Media Practitioners. My name is Roland Yagaba, and I am the founder of Mwado. Mwado is an African social network that is working to ensure that creatives on the platform earn from their content. I am also your host. This is a documentary-style podcast where we'll take a deep dive into the experiential divide between women and men in media while they're conducting their work online. You will hear views from 7 different Ugandans in the media industry on this topic. But due to the pandemic, the interviews were carried out by sending voice notes recorded using phones. So if some of the sound is not that good, please understand and forgive us. This podcast has been made possible with support from the Women at Web Project, which is under the Collaboration on International ICT Policy for East and Southern Africa, also known as CIPESA, or CIPESA, depending on how you pronounce it. Our other partner is Phoenix Reason, whose empathy workshop framework we have used for the interviews. So now I will let our participants introduce themselves.
Hi, my name is Kanara Mugume, and I am an investigative journalist with NBS Television. I'm also a radio show host on Next Radio, political show called The Big Talk. I'm also a podcaster of two podcasts, one called The CoronaCast on coronaviruses and lessons we've learned, and The Election Podcast, one on politics. And that is about the 2021 general elections in Uganda.
My name is Caro Aliek Bayanga, and I am the managing editor for the digital section, digital content at the Monitor Publications Limited.
Hi, my name is Danze Edwin John, aka Dijan. I'm communications and media personality.
My name is Yvonne Injuna. I work with New Vision as a sub-editor. I have worked on TV, I have worked on radio. Now I'm working with print media.
My name is Emmanuel Sejengo. I'm the editor of The Kampala Sun. The Kampala Sun is an English language tabloid of New Vision.
My name is Sima Chakuhede Sabiti, and my background in the media has been quite varied. I have been a radio presenter. I have been a magazine editor. I've also worked in the marketing department of Uganda's biggest media house, as well as working in their online department.
My name is Eva Zanye, Ernest Bazanye. I'm a former journalist, currently everywhere, consultant, writer.
This is episode 4. We shall continue from episode 3 and hear more from our participants on their not-so-pleasant online experiences while working. All right. Welcome all of you to the podcast. Thank you for agreeing to participate in this. Let's dive straight into the questions. Okay. When was the time you noted your affection or appreciation to a colleague of another gender, but you didn't know how? What were the pain or freeze points? Who was the person to you? What was the power dynamic? Why couldn't you express yourself?
So it was very recent, actually. One of the... There was a team member who reported to me previously and worked with me, but then sort of left the desk where I was and went to do something else, but within the company. And we've remained friends. And still, once in a while, we'll talk about this and say, oh, you know, I need your help on that, or I need this. So just talk. He's also very close to my husband, really, really close. He's much younger, so... looks at my husband, you could say, like a not father figure, but he looks up to him in that kind of way. And my husband has really sort of helped him on many occasions in his career and in many other aspects. So recently he sent a message on Twitter and thanking my husband and I and saying, thank you so much. This has been a tough year, but you guys have been there for me, and you know, I don't even know how to thank you. You're so kind and sweet. Thank you so much. I really am blessed to have you. So I remember even feeling guilty because I was thinking, what over this year I've not even really been there for him. I've been like on others, you know, on other things, trying to figure out my work and stuff. It's been a crazy year for many people. So I even felt guilty, like, hey, but I haven't even done what I know more. I should have called and checked on him more and everything. But I was very humbled. First, I first even thought, is something happening? Is, you know, so I even asked my husband, is he okay? Like, why is he saying it? Sort of feels like it's come out of nowhere. And my husband said, no, it's fine. I think he was just basically just saying thank you for being there for him generally. So I thought, oh, this is sweet. So I wanted to send emojis of sort of say, you know, always here for you. You know, we appreciate you. And we, so I wanted to send an emoji of like blowing a kiss. Like, you know, like I would to my daughter, to our daughters or something. And I almost did. Then I thought, you know, like what will people think? They'll get on and they'll be like, why is Carol doing that? Why is she sending that to this young man? She's a married woman. Why is she sending, why is she blowing kisses to this other man? And I know, I don't know, I would be, maybe not, maybe I'm even more reacting, but I just remember I froze. I didn't send the emoji. I didn't. So, and I haven't yet replied to that, you know, tweet, because I feel like I want to show him that I am grateful that he looks at us that way and he respects us and that he appreciates what we have done. And I just want to say, oh, thank you. I know I really want to show him that, you know, right back at you, we care for you. But I was in my head, I'm thinking, hey, but what will it look like? What, you know, what will people start thinking? This is weird. What's Carol doing? Will there be some, you know, snide remarks and that kind of stuff? I haven't yet sent him that reply. I'm still trying to figure out what something really truthful and heartwarming to say without being looked at as, what are you doing? Yeah.
Well, affection and those things. I recently love to tell people I love you, bro. Like bro, like dude. So I've learned to do give this affection to male or female, and because affirmation is very good. I've learned about love languages and all those things, and also basic community and just being nice to people. My cousin from the US, Paul, my big bro, he tells me a lot, I love you, bro. Thank you. Whenever I do something, he just always tells me, I love you, bro. So I know he genuinely cares for me. And it's the thing I've started to express to other people. Like I'll tell you on the till, happy birthday, love you, bro. Are you doing a good job? Love you. You get all those things. When it comes to the ladies, though, because of how it may be misunderstood from maybe your partner, how it may be misunderstood by the other people in the community, sometimes puts you in a very tight spot. For instance, they're very nice close friends of mine who, young girls, generally just like to party with them, listen to their problems, and etc., and usually solve their issues. So most times in the comments, I'm telling them, oh, you're beautiful, you look amazing. And most times the screenshots are going to be taken, sent on WhatsApp groups. Guys are going to be like, hey, are you flirting? Are you hitting on these girls? You get that dynamic of every positive, viable energy you send towards someone may be sexualized, or may be taken out of context, or may be weaponized to come against you later. Like you see politicians, eventually people pull out their receipts and all that stuff, say, these are your nudes, you get it? Just to put you down, because that's how we've weaponized the online language or the communities that we are in. So that's the kind of the scenarios. I mean, I'm very careful and calculated in how I do communicate because of the nature of the people. I just pick particular platforms and I know what I can do here and what I can't do here. And yeah, the genders also, most times when you let's say appreciate how beautiful a woman is, or how pretty they look, or how amazing their body fits on their dresses, you're going to be called out for maybe sexual assault or body, I don't know, that weird stuff of you're really sexualizing, let's say, someone. So with that at the back of your mind, most times you're going to prevent directly or openly encouraging someone or telling them they look amazing. It happens a lot on Twitter, especially. You'll be barraged by a group of women saying, why are you sexualizing everything? You get it? Yet someone is genuinely beautiful. Someone has genuinely put on that dress well. Someone's cleavage is genuinely very attractive, and it has, the whole package has come out well. So you not being able to say that because of the fear of the ripple effect, it may most times be positive, but the ripple effect may be negative. And those screenshots usually just go around and ruin, let's say, your very good brand that you're creating. So yeah, those are most times you like start posting something, typing, and you simply delete. I think that happens to most people. But being someone in the public space, online especially, kind of keeps you away from trying to do those things because of the ripple effect?
About 2 years ago, I used to supervise a freelance writer called Winnie. She has since left and gone to do business. However, she wrote this blockbuster about the lives of the party lives of people in downtown arcades, where they go, where they hang out, and all that. She did everything that a journalist would even think of doing and more. So I really wanted to appreciate her. So I just didn't want to. I just thought it was wicked calling her and telling her this story is a blockbuster, or thanking her. So I waited for our next meeting as a team, the writers meeting the editor to discuss story ideas, and I praised her in that meeting. Our meetings tend to bend towards informal language. We don't usually call ourselves Mr., Mrs. We go by first name basis, and we even use slang in our meetings. We make them as casual as possible so people can express themselves and ideas. You keep building ideas. So in that meeting, I didn't use expressions of the regular boss to the supervised. I talked casually. I don't remember the exact words I used, but it could have been something like, "Babe, that was hot." It could have been along those lines. Now, there are other people in the meeting, of course. Some women, other women, thought I had a personal bias, because Winnie used to be hardworking. So usually when you have a hardworking journalist on the team, is the one you give the, what we call hot ideas to pursue. Because, you know, yeah, you will get the good story at the end. So I used to give her all the good stories. And now she comes with this and I tell her, you know what? You brought the heavens down. So, word went round that I could be having an affair with her. I think it reached me last. However, it wasn't just word going round. It came up to a person in HR heard about it and they asked me what up. So I had to discuss how we work and how I handle these situations and all that. And they gave me advice on how to go with it. But from then, I always felt guilty. It was like I had a big brother around looking and say, "You're going to get this wrong. Okay, why are you talking to her?" And I, being tabloid and entertainment, I work with a lot of younger writers. I'm 41, but most writers are probably in their 20s. They've just left university, because usually when they come for internship, some stay for some years and they're taken on. So they are pretty young. I'm pretty old. And the way they behave is different from the way we were told to behave when we were just coming into New Vision. So, yeah, she can come and just lean on your desk to talk to you. She just comes and stands in front of me and say, "Emma, what happened to my story?" So the way the young people are carrying themselves around these days is quite different from the traditional civil servant way of our parents and even us. So there are always those shocks, which I understand, but my management doesn't understand. One time, a senior colleague called me aside and asked me why I let. She called them, these girls, talk to me the way they do. And it's because, well, I just used to let people express themselves any way they can. Information is what I need. So if you come and cross your legs in front of me, I don't take offense. Others may take offense. So, yeah, that was the moment.
I don't think I've experienced that. I think generally, I try to be. I think generally, I'm, you know, quite open about my emotions and the way I feel about my friends and the people around me. So I am quite sure that people online will know that if I say. Wait a second. There actually is a time, but this wasn't online. Now, online, of course, if everyone knows that if I say, man, I really, the thanks would be in my life, I really love you for just being a part of it. I think most of my friends would understand that this isn't a come online, this is a sincere, heartfelt thing. If it is a come online, I hope that they'll appreciate that it is. But there was a time, this was in IRL. Now, 46-year-old guy, 80s baby. I grew up with Bugs Bunny cartoons from like the 60s. Now, I really don't know much about, I've never risked Tinder or online dating or sliding to the DMs. Pretty much a wuss. I don't know much about the lexicon or symbols and signals of dating in Singe, in life today, the way you guys do it. So I did not know that, because I'm thinking, I tend to think of winking in the sense that Bugs Bunny would wink at the audience to let them know that, hey, we're in this together, right? It's like a greeting, it's something you do, it's pretty innocuous. I've never thought of winking as a sexual thing. Now, a person who is like, I myself am 46. A person who is like half my age, grew up in a different, entirely different generation, entirely different communities, entirely different context, will of course interpret the circumstances differently. Now, for her, she will see winking is something you do, it's a common. So here I am, I'm walking past a friend of mine and my hands are full. I can't wave, I can't nod, I can't. So I wink. Honestly, let me explain the generation situation here. How many years have been. She calls me grandpa as a nickname. This was the one time when I realized exactly how significant that those 20 years of difference between the two of us are. The fact is, she really seemed very, very uncomfortable around me after that. And it was only when I just happened to mention it to somebody, and I didn't even, that they explained to me, you what? You winked? Who winks at people? That's when I said, what's wrong with winking? Honestly, people, like, if you watch those old cartoons, you hardly ever see a sexual wink. It's never there. It's always like a cheeky thing. It's always like a criminal thing. It's like a criminal trying to tell a person that I'm lying. that we're in this plot. Oh, hey man, what's up? Hey Gango. It's basically just like a sign of like camaraderie, more than a sign of sexual seduction. There's another word I was looking for, but it just evaded me. Anyway, yeah, that was the time I felt I was taken when I tried to show appreciation or when I tried to show affection of a person, and was really did it very badly. But I finally sat down and explained that I really didn't mean anything by it, and I'm still not sure whether she believed me or not, and I wouldn't blame her if she didn't, because I've been around that workplace long enough to know that guys are trash, man. I wouldn't believe any of them, even if they came to me and told me, I didn't mean it when I looked at you, I meant this and this and this. I mentioned that I do not kunenya any woman who says men are trash, because honestly, the stuff chicks have to go through, I would be on my guard as well against every single guy, just like I am against all police. I know some policemen who are not, but fuck that. But I treat all policemen like they're about to shoot me. Now, in terms of showing, but if your question was affection, yeah, I think I've got that, yeah. Because you didn't say another gender in, you said a colleague of another gender. But typically when I'm talking to my colleagues in a professional capacity, I always, well, unless the gender aspect itself is involved in is an integral part of the discussion, I just don't really consider it. It really isn't part of the discussion. I'm really able to say, man, that was a great job, you kicked us, without thinking about whether this person is male or female. I've actually often found myself saying things like I don't know how you're going to put this in your Gondi, but you know how let me PG-13 it. You know how we say a person comes in and they're trying to show off how powerful their power, we call it waggling their penis around, trying to show that how big their penis is, yeah. Or how we say that this person is trying to mark their territory by pissing in a corner, like how male wolves do in the woods. Or how we say so-and-so got into a penis measuring contest. I use those things and such similes and such imagery in a gender neutral way. I find that if whether the person in, this isn't showing appreciation, this is actually mostly criticism, that is actually when I'll find myself using what should be gendered language, but I've been using it in a non-gendered way instead. They're just let me make up names, Jane and Mary are in this dick measuring contest, and you better stay out of the way. Or it did. It's something like that.
That's never really been an issue for me. Especially when it comes to a colleague. Obviously, again, there are boundaries. you know, their boundaries. I think it varies. If I can give an example from a personal experience, working on radio, particularly if you're doing a breakfast show or any show where you have a co-host, obviously there's a level of camaraderie and so on that you have to develop in order to have a good show. And your friends, your buddies, breakfast show guys, you tend to bond because like you are together every day, usually 5 days a week, very early in the morning when no one else is really around and you are the only ones who are understanding this experience that you are all going through. Most of my radio career, I was the only female on the team, particularly in studio. But I never had an issue with showing appreciation or affection to my colleagues. Pain points. Your working relationship can be misconstrued by, let's say, spouses or girlfriends, boyfriends, partners, whatever you want to call them. They may think that, look, you guys are really close and you are together at a time that would normally be spent with the person closest to you in your life, those early waking hours of the morning. So that I guess is what I would describe as a pain point. In my personal experience, the person or persons would probably be my co-hosts. Power dynamics were not really an issue, much as for most of my radio career, I was the manager. So essentially my co-hosts reported to me, I was their supervisor. And so there was a very fine line because from 6 to 10 during the show, I was a co-host, but for the rest of the day, I was the boss. I was their boss essentially. But I think you have to set boundaries. Again, going back to that word, boundaries, where yes, for these 4 hours we're doing the show, we're co-hosts, but after that, I am your supervisor, and let's just make it work. So I always made sure to make the boundaries clear. Therefore, we were all able to express ourselves appropriately.
I don't remember if I've had such a point in life. I don't think so.
When was something you said online taken the wrong way? How did that feel like?
I have never said anything and it backfires, you know, because even when I'm speaking with people, I have self-censorship, even if it's not, you know, writing like on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram, because if you put something on Facebook, people will take screenshots. And so that one is kind of like permanent. People are very fast. They will see it, take screenshots and start sharing. You will do nothing to prevent the sharing and people knowing that you have actually posted that. But even when I'm speaking with people, like physically, I am naturally self-censored. So I usually think really a lot about what I'm going to say before I say it.
So recently someone quoted my name and then just asked me a question. So someone with like 200 followers, probably 2 likes and stuff. It was not a viral question, but someone tagged my name and asked me, these people who steal our monies, do you think that they think about this country? So I quoted the tweet and said, and I'm very specific with my words, and said that look, I've interacted with some of them, and truth is that not that they do not think about this country or care for it, but sometimes they find themselves trapped in an unending pleasure to just care for personal interests. And I was attacked. I was so attacked that people did not try to understand the message I was trying to, you know, pass on. They did not take my words carefully. And I felt like people did not understand me, and making replies to them and each and everyone would just make it worse. So I just kept quiet. It just wouldn't make sense.
I think you could say that the time when I apologized for an error we had made something we had, what I just explained earlier. We had, were doing a campaign. We thought we would appreciate and celebrate women out there who had been able to get out of difficult situations in their relationships, out of violent relationships, and so we wanted to celebrate them, but we put out the comments, not the posts and tweets we put out did not come off well, and we had to put that down. And then we tried to, we apologized as MPL, but I also apologized as Carol, and it still was not taken the right way. I was still, you know, insulted, and even later on, even much later, to the point that even BBC did a story, I recall. BBC did a story, BBC Online did a story about it, you know, monitor applications, let's put this up, and there's been backlash from the community, women are saying this and that, and I remember feeling really bad because it was on BBC, and because I really like BBC, it's one of my favorite stations, one of the favorite, you know, I follow BBC. I don't maybe watch as much TV because I don't watch TV that much. But I mean, BBC Radio is, I listen to BBC Radio as much as I can, wherever I can. I have BBC, I follow, you know, their, it's one of the few apps that I put on alerts, you know, for breaking news. I don't put alerts on many other apps I have, whether it's news or work apps or different, or just, you know, relax or whatever apps. And I don't like notifications, but I have for BBC breaking news. So, and so I follow them on Twitter, I follow them on Facebook, I follow them on Instagram. I mean, I love BBC. So I was, when I remember seeing that, I felt bad. I was like, oh, how can we get there? You know, is it that bad? And then, but also I felt bad because I thought BBC should have called us. They should have called me as the head of department, or they should have called my social media person at that time to get a comment from us, at least in fairness. So I remember feeling bad about that, and I remember feeling, thinking, I've just been completely misunderstood this time.
Yeah, this part in particular, like I had earlier hinted about me having made some remarks about subjects online that people may find offensive. For instance, based on the content that I consume, or the way I've been raised, or the communities that I'm in, being a gamer, movie junkie, and all those things, etc., you're kind of exposed to a lot of cultures and stuff. Don't worry, I'm not cooking, I'm just laying ground to what I'm about to say next. There's a lot of cultural influences and things like that. Let me just, for example, Borat, the movies, both of them, the way they've tackled cultural issues and etc. is kind of very raw, radical, but it gets the point home. Now, not everyone is going to be comfortable with that stuff. I've had a couple of friends in the LGBTQ community. I've worked with them for a very long time, but since I was with Sylvia Warrior, an African woman. And maybe some gay jokes, maybe some, I don't know, body jokes. I've personally been fat shamed before in the WhatsApp group. And it kind of got me to work out. I lost a couple of pounds, but I took it in good faith because of the kind of person that I am. I think, let's see, searching on Twitter one time, and I found out that one of my friends, she's gay, had blocked me, and yet we were friends in real life. So I asked her, what the deuce, man? So, and she's like, I mean, the couple of things you say online, all references you make, all cultural icons that you find as inspiration and etc. that I don't agree with, and that's why kind of you indirectly offended me or made me feel different about my, I don't know, sexuality and things like that. So I just found out that because I'm a big fan of Dave Chappelle, he's the goat for me when it comes to stand-up comedy and sketches, and a couple of sketches he had been referencing, he does very many things against the LGBT community. So the fact that I referenced that comedian or artist or influencer for me kind of made the other person feel small, because I think they probably referred back to a couple of jokes he's made in his sketch comedy. So that's the scenario that I am with, but and I've never directly attacked someone or made someone feel small, like in that sense, unless probably they've just never come out to me. But I try to avoid the narrative. So, but yeah, that's the scenario I can paint for you.
It's something that I said online that has been taken the wrong way. Like I mentioned, the one thing that made me say, okay, I felt diminished, I felt small. And it's kind of quite ridiculous because it's really hard to make me feel small. I don't have any self-esteem. I may say that I think that I'm the best writer in Uganda, but I don't think that makes me like any very important or very valuable as a human being. I'm still, just another piece of shit. I haven't really done much of value to the world. So I mentioned what it was that I said that was taken out of context. Generally, I was just basically saying that I don't believe in collective culpability. I don't believe in like blaming an entire group or social category or tribe in the sense of the sociological sense of the term, not the sense that I am a Muganda. I don't believe in that because it's a slippery slope. Eventually everyone is going to be guilty. I mean, we can't blame white people for slavery because we black people will then have to take the blame as well, because we are the ones who went and snatched the slaves out and took them to the coast and sold them to the white chaps. We are the ones who did this. So we are both blacks. So we should also be, we Africans should also be paying reparations to black Americans. If we're going to blame everyone on the basis of their skin color. Generally, there are things like this. I just don't believe, it's a slippery slope. You can't, it's just like, I mean, I understand male privilege and where it comes from, but the thing is, it's a slippery slope. The question of male privilege doesn't stop at the point when you want to blame, when you have laid the blame where you wanted to lay it. It's a slope that continues, and the thing, sooner or later, I'm going to sit here and you're going, I feel that I may walk into a building and I may walk into a restaurant and a woman will walk into the same restaurant sitting at her table, I sit at my table, and the waiter will come and talk to me and not talk to her. He's just going to assume that I am the one paying, and so he'll give me the attention. He'll be very nice to me because he wants his tip for that. The reason why that's a very shallow example of male privilege, but I just happened to be in a restaurant right now, and it's just what has just occurred to me because I'm trying to not make to make this shorter, so I'm not going to mention. I don't want to go into how I am more likely to become CEO or president of the World Bank than a woman is, just because I happen to be male. But then it's a really slippery slope, because you realize that if the same thing happened, like in this restaurant, okay, this particular restaurant is the Denko, but let's say that, okay, yes, in situations of business, I know that, okay, I'm more likely to get attention than a woman is because I am male. But if this woman is white, she's more likely to get, her privilege trumps, her white privilege trumps my male privilege. If she's black, if she's an older woman with expensive clothes and looks like money, so wealth privilege trumps male privilege. It's generally, it's very banal. I don't know if even why. Oh, I don't remember why I came to the question of privilege. We're talking about taking things out of context. Yes, The way Twitter and Facebook work these days is that they will show you you know how the algorithm works. I'm just going to say it for the sake of any of your listeners, if you use this stuff at all. I'm going to say this for the sake of the listeners who are not familiar with it. Maybe you stay on the nice things like Pinterest, and you don't mess with Twitter. What happens is that a tweet is posted and it gets a lot of responses, a lot of engagement, that is people replying to it or liking it or disliking it or retweeting it, it's given more visibility and more people get to see it. If people do not respond as much to your tweet, then it gets less. So what happens is, that naturally we people on Twitter and actually on Facebook as well are more likely to respond to things that outrage us. And so if someone comes along and says something triggering, if someone comes along and says something that outrages us or triggers us, we are more likely to respond to this thing, and that means it's more likely to get visibility on Twitter. Now this could is so what you see on your TL isn't the full story. The person might be, like, for example, like I said, when I responded to the men are trash statement which this person said, I did not see the context in which it was being said. I did not see that it was in response to something really heinous that had happened to a fellow human being. I just saw someone saying, no, men are trash. And without the context, I behaved very flippantly and just took it to mean they're talking about something very like about the usual stuff, about the fact that the guy will leave a toilet seat up. I really, so it's the nature of social media and online discourse that it rewards inflammatory and outrage inducing statements and discussions, whereas if we're going to get to any, I mean this is the thing, the course of the progress of human rights and social justice has always been basically shifting the axis in the center. It's always been about what the moderate people think, not about the extremists. So, whereas on the extreme, you have the extreme left and the extreme right arguing these things, but then what really matters is what the people in the middle think. People in the center, are people in the center more likely to be accepting of gay rights than people on the extreme left have already made their mind up. Yes, gay, we believe in LGBTQ+ rights. The people on the right have also made up their minds. We don't. However, real social change comes from what the majority in the center are thinking. So after a while, you find that, you know, there were times when they all the people in the center felt that this is terrible, that this is ungodly and ungodly and ungodly. Now we find that the most people in the center feel that, yeah, if he's gay, he's gay, or if she's not, if she's bi, she's bi, or if he's non-gendered, he's non-gendered. This happens. It's really, I'm not going to walk out and, you know, try to make his life miserable because he doesn't, he isn't attracted to genders the way I am. That is so that, oh my goodness, I have spoken for so long that I've actually forgotten what the actual question was that I was trying to answer. Oh yes, we're talking about what I've said, something I've said that has been taken out, that has been misunderstood. Well, yes, but then that is just how Twitter and Facebook are. They naturally make things you say misunderstood, and that's why I don't engage on social justice issues. And I really recommend that no one should take your stuff to Medium or to I don't know. Don't even make a YouTube channel, because even YouTube has the same algorithm. So I suggest that don't discuss these things online. They will be taken out of context, and they will be used to fuel division and even more prejudice.
I don't think I could give you a specific example, but of course this happens a lot, and it's understandable because, you know, online, if it's not a video or if it's not audio, your tone can get lost. And the beauty of social media is that, yes, you're communicating with so many different people from so many different walks of life, but that also opens you to misunderstandings and misconceptions and things being misconstrued. I'm trying to think of something that I've actually said online that was taken the wrong way. There are so many. There are so many. I cannot think of a specific example. But it happens, and it's understandable. Because online, everything is... First of all, everything's moving so fast. You could be reading something on Twitter and then the timeline refreshes. So before you've even really internalized whatever it is that somebody was saying, the message is already gone, like it has already scrolled. So it's very easy for things to be taken the wrong way. And that's why I'm always very careful when I respond to something online, because you can end up looking stupid if you do not read what the person was saying and you just reacted without trying to understand. Often you will end up with egg on your face.
Has witnessing online abuses against others affected your online engagement?
Yes, I would say it has. I would say that online, seeing online abuse has against others has made me worried or bothered about my own online engagement. I think that's why I talked about earlier about being very careful what I put up, because I see that people can be vicious and attack people on the things they say and they do. I can't maybe think of a particular example, but I have seen people coming up and expressing themselves and saying what they want to say. For example, this country is very, the political atmosphere is very tense, and you, so of course there are different parties that are, people have affiliation to different parties, but the particular parties or movements where if you say I am part of this, the vitriol and the anger that comes towards you is just, it's too much. Or if you raise an issue with another party to say, but you got this wrong, but you're not fixing this, or you're not your leader is not commenting on this issue or dealing with this, it's, oh my god, you know. So it's you people just get so angry and they start to abuse you. They don't even try and understand what you're saying, see if you have merit in what you're saying. They don't try and come back and say, look, no, as a party we have done this. This is this is proof that we've done this. This is our record. We're on the record to say that this is what we have done. This is what we're doing. You just don't. So you just, you know, it's difficult now to have a decent comment or a decent debate or discussion online about politics. It's difficult to do the same about certain aspects of womanhood or feminism, if I may put it that way. You know, whether you are out there saying, as women we need more pay, as women we need more more chances, more opportunities to get, you know, bigger positions and, you know, put ourselves out there, you know, whether you're saying that or whether you're saying, as a woman, I am very proud of being a homemaker, I am very proud of staying home and taking care of my children and raising them to be the best they can be. You know, there is not like space to sort of agree or understand that. So indeed, I feel like seeing people being abused, seeing people being harassed, seeing people being insulted online over their views and opinions sort of gets me to hold back and sitting on hot topics. So certain topics I would not comment on, even if I have very strong views or very strong opinions, because I feel like once I do that, then people are just going to you know, jump on it and just take it in a different tangent and make it up what it's not really meant to be, and not have a good discussion or a good debate about it, or even just, you know, argue out their points well and disagree, you know, disagree well. They'll just, you know, they won't even disagree, they'll just tear you down. So that can be difficult.
Oh yeah, I see online abuse a lot these days. It's like I said, petty is a new cool. Most times I won't call them kids, not like teenies or whatever, just slang. They think being hardcore, rough, this guy who's out there to diss, gets all the likes and retweets is the cool thing. But unfortunately, the long end or the tail end of that is depression, mental distress, and unfortunately sometimes go all the way to suicide. There's a big YouTuber who ended up taking his life because of pressures I really didn't need. But they all stem from small comments, retweets, not liking their posts, not getting enough likes. Those weird pressures that happen online. But yeah, I've seen a lot of online abuse. It affects my engagement because it's going to deter you from participating in particular conversations. It also kills your mood. It takes away from the reality of the humanity of we're in this virtual space, so I'm going to be as rude as possible. No one is ever going to find me or beat me. There's a guy who came at me during the lockdown earlier on, and he claimed that the tactics I use at Next Media to get brand relevance and positioning for my clients or the brands that I handle, in this case it was NBS, is by pushing the wrong narrative. There's a stunt that was done at Next Media for in good faith, it was supposed to be a stand against racial discrimination and things like that. It was supposed to be a Black Lives Matter movement, but then the team went with All Lives Matter. The statement was out of ignorance at that particular point, and everyone understood the gravity because it spread across the globe. So my name being placed in that similar scenario really ticked me off. I found it brand attack or personal attack on me, and I asked this kid to apologize to me. He really didn't. People are gassing him up, known to. I simply wanted an online apology because I needed that at that point. They ended up getting the account suspended. He ended up sending me an apology via his lawyer and my lawyer. And I really took it that far because I wanted people to understand how far it actually goes both ways. So the engagement is affected because you're going to expect abuse from no matter how justified they may think they are because of the nature or their character. But it keeps you away. There's a friend of mine called Rudenda who I normally engage with, because we're all from old school Twitter. We find the new things happening and we're also sometimes lost at exactly what's going on. So we keep on bouncing ideas, and we all agree that the way things are now aren't the way the things were, and then people just don't see the gravity of the things they do in the long run. Yeah, so that's how it affects my engagement. I stay away from the nasty conversations, or I usually call out people, especially about fake news or abuse. When someone posts a picture of a lady and is body shaming, I'll call you out straightforward. That's just who I am. People know me for doing that.
Yes, so much. Sometimes you just want to reply to a comment and make someone understand, but then you check their profile and their previous replies to people and you're like, nah. Sometimes you just want to defend someone because you know them personally. Part of my audience online is an audience that I've engaged with personally, whether physically or, you know, through DMs, personal messages or WhatsApp, and you know them and you just want to try to defend them and try to make people understand their point, but you can't because they're just people who will abuse you, insult you, and the point will get lost in there. And I just felt like, you know what, just withdraw. Maybe you can send a message in this person's direct message of voice or WhatsApp and tell them they should ignore. So I've reached that point where I just ignore 90% of the comments.
Definitely. Absolutely. Especially when I look at the way women are addressed. In Uganda, it's tricky because obviously we're in a very patriarchal society, but also the pitfall that comes with social media is you're going to have to deal with a lot of bots and trolls and people who are speaking from behind profile pictures that are not even theirs. They're not even using their real names online. And in terms of my online engagement, witnessing online abuses, how it has affected my online engagement is I'm very particular about who I follow back. And I also mute and block at will. I will not just automatically follow back. I will first look at your timeline. What kind of language are you using? Are you a misogynist? Are you a homophobe? Are you xenophobic? Are you a bigot, basically? Even if you could have responded to a tweet of mine or a Facebook post and been really hilarious. But if I go and check your timeline and you're being hateful in any other way, then I'll be like, nah, this is not somebody that I want to bring onto my timeline. When it comes to Facebook, my Facebook is very, very private. It's mostly family and very close friends. Twitter is much more open, obviously. And Instagram, again, is also private because I have had experiences where my pictures were sort of taken and used in ways that I would rather they were not, particularly by tabloids. So I am very, very particular, and I do differentiate between how open I am and the access that other people have to my different social media platforms that I'm on.
And that brings us to the end of this episode. Thanks once again to our participants for agreeing to be a part of this. And thank you to the women at Web Project and Cypesa for making this happen and for Next Reason for allowing us to use their framework. Catch you on the next episode. I remain Roland, your host.